this is Sheila Bender, and you're listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today, we're talking with Elizabeth Austin, who is the Washington State Poet Laureate since 2014 until 2016. Her debut collection of poetry came out from Blue Begonia Press in 2011. It's called Every Dress a Decision. It was also a finalist for the Washington State Book Award. She's the author of two previous books, which were chapbooks, The Girl Who Goes Alone from Floating Bridge Press and Where Currents Meet from Todilly Press. She's made an audio CD of her poems called Skin Prayers. Her work has been featured on the Writer's Almanac and Verse Daily and appeared in the Los Angeles Review, Bellingham Review, and Willow Springs. She's noted for her engaging public performances of poetry and has been featured at Poets House in New York City, Minneapolis's The Loft, the Skagit River Poetry Festival, Spokane's Get Lit, Seattle's Cheap Wine and Poetry, and Bumpershoot, among other venues. Elizabeth produces poetry programs for NPR affiliate KUOW 94.9. Her MFA is from Antioch University in L.A. She teaches at Richard Hugo House in Seattle, and she makes her living at Seattle Children's Hospital, where she offers poetry and journaling workshops for the staff. Welcome, Elizabeth. It'll be really fun to catch up with you.
Thanks, Sheila. I appreciate you inviting me to talk with you.
Well, there's so much to talk about. Reading through your bio again, I realize how much work you've done that's probably prepared you very well for being our current Poet Laureate. And first question, did I get it right that your tenure ends in 2016, or does it go through 2016?
It ends at the end of January 2016.
So you've got a while to go yet, and you've been Poet Laureate for a little while now. So maybe we should start there. How's it going?
It's an amazing, amazing adventure. One of the things I'm enjoying the most is discovering that in every corner of the state that I've visited so far, I'm meeting people who are making it their business to make sure that there is a place for literature and a place for poetry in their community. And it's been really exciting to meet those people and find out what they're up to.
That is a surprise, isn't it? Because it wasn't that many years ago when poetry was something people didn't understand what to do with, and they thought they hated it from the way they had learned about it in school. They thought they didn't understand it. So something's changed.
Well, I think it's in the process of changing, and what I'm finding is that there are lots of people who, I think, like me, want other people to have access to what poetry gives them. So here's an example of what I mean about people making a place for literature in their towns. There's a little town called Toledo, which is way south on the I-5 corridor, south of Chehalis. It's a small town, and people in the town had applied to the library system to have a library in their town, and their application was denied, and they were told that they could have a book kiosk, which is, of course, not at all the same as having an actual library. And so the people of this town got together and fundraised and got an empty storefront, which had been a pharmacy, donated. They renovated the space. They got books donated. They developed a volunteer librarian schedule. And now that town has a library. And the first event they had there was a reading that I did with a poet from Yakima named Terry Martin. And I was so moved by the fact that these folks had decided that they wouldn't take no for an answer and that their town needed a library. They wanted a place for kids to come and be read to and check books out, and they wanted a place where they could invite writers to come and read, and so they made it happen.
That's very, very satisfying. So what other kinds of projects have you encountered in your travels so far?
Well, when I was in Spokane, I taught a writing workshop at Auntie's Books. And there was a wonderful range in age of people participating in this workshop. The youngest person was 9 years old, and the oldest people on the guests were in their early 70s. There were two young girls who took the class, 9 and 11, and they produce a poetry program for one of the community radio stations in Spokane. And so after the end of the workshop, they interviewed me on a battered-up iPhone and wanted to to include my visit in their poetry program. The fact that they're 9 and 11 years old and making a regular poetry program just knocked me out.
I'm glad you repeated their ages, because I was about to say, did you say 9 and 11?
I did, yeah.
That's excellent. Did you get to hear the program?
I didn't, no. so I haven't heard from them.
Uh-huh.
But
they went out there.
Cool.
They went out there and they got the mm-hmm. information for their program. So as I listen to you talk about the two projects that you've shared with us so far, I'm thinking about how your career seems to me to very satisfyingly perhaps led up to this position of yours. You have a background in performing. You've been doing radio work for KUOW. You have your own workout. You made that CD. You teach. You give readings. So are you feeling that that background is really coming into play now that you're doing these more official and public duty for poetry?
I do. You know, one of the reasons why I applied for the position is that I feel strongly that one of the things that's particular about the life in poetry that I'm making is that poetry advocacy is a huge part of it and has been really almost from the very beginning. One of the other things that I do is in my role at Seattle Children's Hospital, which the bulk of what I do there is in the marketing department. But I also partner with the pastoral care program, and I offer creative writing workshops in the form of reflective writing sessions for the hospital staff. And what I have found by bringing in poems, writing prompts, doing timed writing activities with people who don't identify as writers, mm-hmm. is that they're hungry for what writing offers them. And that I think one of the things that I am getting better and better at is providing kind of a bridge, an opening, a doorway to invite people into poetry, to set aside whatever anxiety they may have from the way it was taught when they were kids or just their own sense of not being sure where to start, that I'm trying to provide people with an opening to step in and explore poetry in a way that will be meaningful to their lives. I've been doing that for years. So in this role now, I've just been able to do that in a lot of different contexts.
That's great. And so you are a change agent. When I said something's changing, you're finding the people who are longing for the kinds of things poetry endeavors supply, and you're definitely making sure as much as you can that they get those openings. And it's very wonderful to hear that. I was recently Googling writing and healing for a class that I'm teaching and came across so much literature about proof that people heal from even physical wounds more quickly when they're writing. I think that's not to us maybe a new idea, but for it to be scientifically studied and put out there is very, very exhilarating to me. And I think those people at Children and around the state are really fortunate that you get to do that. And so my next question is, what's your focus when you're providing the opening?
I always use example poems as a starting point, partly because I want the workshops to begin by reading some poems aloud together and talking about them and trying to model a way of relating to a poem that's really about what do you notice in the poem? What do you connect to? I'm not asking people, what's the theme of the poem? There's no quiz. There's no essay about the poem. I'm really trying to provide the experience of reading a poem and having an experience of it, connecting to it in a way that lets people speak from their own expertise in terms of what they're actually hearing in the poem. And then I'll try and offer some vocabulary to help people shape what they're seeing. But it's really about confirming that the most important thing a poem asks of us is our attention. Often one of the poems that I'll use as a model poem is a poem called Eating Together by Lee Young Lee. And it works as a wonderful model poem for people who may be writing their first poem because it lets them start from a place of knowing. We end up writing poems about a memorable meal and usually centers on some sort of family event. And even if you know nothing about poetry or writing poetry, you're an expert on your own family and the foods you associate with your family. And so we start from that place of mastery to move into perhaps something that feels new and challenging, which is the writing of a poem. And then we have the company of the model poem.
Excellent. So that was going to be my question. How do you move from having people appreciate that they understand and resonate with an experience in a poem, a poem is delivering? How do we move from acknowledging that and observing that to feeling courageous enough to attempt our own? And I think you've answered it by seeing that the subject matter of that poem is something that we also have some expertise in. We have our own experiences of eating meals with family. And do you ever find, though, that there are some people who stumble right at that point, who feel like nothing they would have to write about is poetic enough, or that they don't have the poetry skills, writing craft skills, to make it sound good on the page?
Yes. What I often find is that many people still feel that it isn't a poem if it doesn't rhyme. And I'm finding that that's often true among young people, maybe who are coming to poetry through rap or through hip hop, where end rhyme is a really significant part of those forms. And one of the things I try to encourage people to do, and you know, we talk about more than one poem, so they're being exposed to poems that don't necessarily have end rhyme, that what makes a poem work isn't fancy language or anything highfalutin. And so we try and look at what's really moving in the poem. What are we connecting with? And I think often what happens is when people see the kind of ways that poems maybe are not what they expected, it creates an opening for them. The other reason why I often encourage people not to use rhyme, especially early in their writing life or early in coming back to writing, is that too much focus on end rhyme often closes down a poem. It often short circuits a poem before it's begun and can lock people into a rhythm or a pattern that has nothing to do with the way they're actually connecting to the subject matter that we're writing about. And not that subject matter is everything in a poem, because poems by definition have multiple layers, but sometimes just giving people permission to use their everyday language makes writing a first draft of a poem feel possible.
You are listening to In Conversation, discussions on writing and the writing life on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. Sheila Bender's discussion with Washington State Poet Laureate Elizabeth Austin continues.
Some people have a mind that works in rhyme, but for a lot of us, our language, English, is not a particularly helpful one if you're always trying to rhyme words. So there's so many more of our words we can use if we're not rhyming. But what I find is that when a person lets themselves go, and I wonder if you feel this too, and just gets into the experience of what they're writing about with details and images, wonderful sound suddenly appears, kind of from the unconscious.
Yes.
Do they recognize that when you show them that's happening?
In the workshops that I teach, there isn't time for me to give detailed feedback on individual poems, so I don't know that I can answer that question.
All right. I just, for myself, when I'm writing or in workshopping with other people, can we begin to really hear where things go flat and where things have more rhythm and are more musical? And I bet your students are hearing that too. I mean, it's just something you sort of pick up for yourself in a way too, that it sounds right when it means right, something like that. So speaking about this then, I want to go back into your beginnings. So when did you begin writing poetry?
I was one of those kids who wrote poetry instinctively. I think I was largely influenced by growing up in a very religious household where prayer was part of the structure of the day. We said grace before meals. We said bedtime prayers. I actually went to Mass 6 days a week. So I was being exposed to language that was being used in a very structured, very heightened way. And I loved the music of prayers, and I loved the possibility that language could be so potent as to transform bread and wine into the body and blood of the Savior. And so that my origins in poetry are really around poetry as a form of prayer, poetry as transformative language. And some smart adult put a little notebook and a pen in my hand as soon as I could write, and I just was off and running. And I'm thankful that my parents didn't keep any of that because I think it was probably terrible. But it was part of how I began to understand that shaping my interior life into language is just part of who I am. I didn't take writing poetry as a serious part of my creative life really until my early 30s. I was very focused on acting through my teens, all the way through my 20s. It was I like to refer to it as kind of an early midlife crisis that caused me to make the completely counterintuitive decision to leave the impractical world of theater for the even less practical world of writing poetry.
Well, if anyone has made it practical, I would say you have. This might be a good time.
I've been very lucky.
This might be a good time for you to read to us. Do you have a poem selected that you might share?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
This is a poem from Every Dress a Decision, and it's called Humans. It opens with an epigraph, a brief quote from the poet W.S. Merwin, who described humans as a brief and strange species. Humans. The day begins in disarray. You ought, you should, you must, you must, you must, you must. The bees will not be stilled. What stitches mind to body? Who cues the unraveling? If it's true, we're infused with something not found in doorknob, bird, or bee. Why am I confused about all the important things? Crows trampoline the power lines from house to house. They don't care who runs the world. I gape at the sky, color of sunflower, color of blood. The world is not as I have believed it to be. I find no vantage, no long view across even the surface. Peristalsis propels the worm into darkness. Electricity animates the lamp. The leaf drinks at the top of the tree. I understand none of the beautiful things. The sparrow bathes in dirt. I don't know why. The birds do not ask themselves or each other, how are we to live? They do not ask us to love them.
Thank you, Elizabeth. That was beautiful. I hear so much
Thank
of the
you.
Body in there.
I'm glad. I'll tell you, that was a big turning point for me in my life as a writer. My early poems did not include the body much at all. They tended to be very abstract. But once I began to study poetry seriously and to understand the way those sensory details invite the reader into the poem and began to try to cultivate those sensory details in my first draft and then certainly in my revisions, my writing, I think, not only deepened but became more expressive to a reader or a listener.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to ask you how you think the potential career you turned your back on in acting may, in the end, have informed your poetry.
It's a huge influence, partly because as an actor, I was training to do Shakespeare, which is, of course, poetry allowed. So I had years of vocal training. I briefly taught voice. And so I'm alert to the way a poem in the air is a slightly different being than the poem on the page. And I revise out loud, as many poets do. But I'm trying to also be aware and capitalize on the way language is physical, that words, sounds have intrinsic weight and pitch and duration, and that's part of how language becomes musical. That's part of how language has melody. Those natural inflections of pitch are part of what gives our speech that musical quality.
So I know that some poets these days are trying to study voice and study with actors or directors so that they read differently than they might otherwise. And that brings me to my question about the CD you produced. It says in the bio that this was self-published, and I think it's, again, it just speaks to your background and your interest in sharing poetry. So could you tell us a little bit about Skin Prayers and why you went about doing that.
Sure. I produced it in 2006, and the timing of it came about because I had been invited again to participate as one of the regional poets in the Skagit River Poetry Festival. I'd been very fortunate to be invited a number of times, and when I was invited for the 2006 festival, I was really sort of heartbroken that I didn't have a book yet and didn't want to self-publish my poems in a book. I still hoped to work with a publisher and an editor to get those out. So I decided that I would create an audio CD, partly because it does suit who I am as a poet. I think, you know, part of my identity is as someone who cares deeply about the poem out loud. It's something I teach often. It just seems to be a good fit for me. I also had access to the studios at KUOW, which made it much easier. So I invited a number of friends into the performance studio and recorded this live reading and then edited and mastered it myself, which was a really satisfying experience to take the creation of the poem all the way through that process of selecting an order, even down to how I was managing the sound levels within the CD, working with a designer to create a cover, getting it produced. It was very satisfying to take ownership of the whole process.
Well, these days with computing, I bet lots of people could make a CD just at their own desk without a studio.
Oh, it's never been easier, sure. So many computers make it very easy for you to record right there. There's very easy to use audio editing software. There are lots of companies out there that will press the CD for you. It's very accessible these days.
It seems,
you know, as is putting your poems in a book form too.
Right. But it seems to me that the people at the Skagit Valley Poetry Festival must have been excited to purchase a CD. Did they purchase it in as others would purchase a book?
You know, that's been an interesting thing. Some people, yes. And when I didn't have a book at all, I think the people who had seen me there a number of times and were interested in what I was doing wanted it. But it doesn't sell like a book. And I think the reason why is that you can pick up a book and dip into it. You don't need any technology. But with a CD, you need something to play it on. Mm-hmm. And it's a different kind of time commitment. You know, the CD unfolds at its own pace. You can't speed it up. You can't leaf through a CD the way you can leaf through a book. I'm glad that I did it. It made sense for me.
I guess I'm a person who likes listening to words when I'm driving, for instance. So mm-hmm. to me, it sounds like it would be a wonderful thing to be able to just have a CD, make it into a playlist on a tablet or an iPod or a phone, and be able to hear a writer speaking to me. Maybe mm-hmm. we'll see more of it. I mean, I'm guessing it's less expensive than publishing a book, even self-publishing a book. What do you think?
I don't remember what the numbers are, and I haven't self-published a book, so I can't say for sure. Yeah. But
I just think people might be able to share their poems with others pretty quickly that way. But we'll see if anyone gets inspired by our discussion.
Well, I'll just add that you can even sidestep the whole CD, and you can make recordings available online.
That's right.
You don't even have to make the physical artifact of the CD.
Right, and then just share the link.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that would be exciting if poets did that as a place. Maybe it'll become one of your Poet Laureate projects somewhere. Well, we only have a little bit of time left, so is there anything you'd like to tell us that we haven't touched on?
Well, just that as the Poet Laureate, I'm going to all 39 counties in the state, and there's a website that I put together called wapoetlaureate.org, and there's an events page there that lists what I'm up to and gives kind of a sense of the scope of what I'm doing. It's a place, if people want information about how to bring me to their community, you can also find out about that there as well.
Okay, I'm going to spell that out because I know I've had trouble spelling laureate. So this is WAPOETLAUREATE.org. And I want listeners to know they can also learn more about you at ElizabethAustin, enwordpress.com, and Austin is spelled E-N at the end. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time today. It's been really a joy hearing what you're up to now and how your past has influenced you and your poetry, and thank you so much for reading the excellent poem.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been a great pleasure to talk with you, Sheila.
You have been listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life with Sheila Bender. For more of Sheila's interviews, please go to Sheila's website, www.writingitreal.com/audio.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Production coordinator is Mike Schlexer.